As we continue to follow the outbreaks of bacterial meningitis on college campuses in New Jersey and California, we're going to talk now about bacteria. Researchers at the University of Texas in Austin have come up with a new way of studying how bacteria interact with the world and each other. From the Here and Now Contributors Network, KUT's Matt Largy reports.
So scientists have a couple of problems when it comes to studying bacteria.
Since the times of Pasteur, we've been growing bacteria in these large glass tubes.
That's Marvin Whiteley. He's a professor at the University of Texas at Austin.
And I'm a microbial physiologist, so I work on bacteria and how they behave.
For more than a century, we've been growing bacteria samples in beakers or petri dishes.
The problem is that most of those bacteria in those conditions, that's not really how they grow out in nature.
So that's the first problem. The second problem, in a beaker or a petri dish, you can't control who comes and goes. And that's a big deal because bacteria, they know what's around them. They're aware.
Oh, they're absolutely aware. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt bacteria are aware.
And the company a bacterium keeps can make a big difference. Jason Shear is a chemist at UT.
Just like human beings, living cells function differently when they're by themselves, like out in the middle of a field, or when they're grouped together with other cells. Think of being in the middle of a Longhorn football game. Bacteria, we seem to think, are lone rangers. Really, bacteria function quite differently when they're in mass. They change their behavior. They start making different proteins and other different molecules.
And in some cases, bacteria, they're using those molecules to talk to each other.
There's a bacterium that lives off the coast of Hawaii. It's called Vibrio fischeri, and this bacterium produces visible light. So if you grow it up in a beaker and go in a dark room, it's a light bulb. It does this because it has a symbiosis with a small squid there, that it actually colonizes the squid and makes light for the squid. Well, what's interesting about this bacterium is it doesn't make light until there's a whole lot of them around.
Vibrio fischeri actually count each other. Each one knows how many others are around it by sensing this certain molecule.
It makes this molecule at a constant rate, each bacterium does, and as their numbers build, this molecule builds.
Like little beacons that say, "I'm here, brother."
And then as it gets to a certain point, they all respond collectively and begin to make light.
Bacteria, it turns out, are social creatures. Who they're with and how many there are matters.
Certain types of bacteria, when they start grouping together, at some point, their properties change.
And the results can be beautiful, like the glow of the Vibrio fischeri. Or the results can be ugly. You see, the same thing happens when some bacteria are in you. They don't make you sick right away. It starts with just a few of them, and they lie dormant.
And they just grow, and they count their numbers until they get to a point that there's so many of them that they start causing havoc, and your immune system can't clear them.
It's sort of like building up an army.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. Building up an army, but not having the defenses come up until you're ready for them. That's exactly right, yeah.
Whoa, they're so sneaky.
No, they're very sneaky, right? I mean, it's pretty cool, right?
Pretty cool until that bacteria army is living inside you. Now, we know bacteria are changed by other bacteria around them, but
relatively little is known about at what point do those changes occur. How many cells, for instance, need to be clustered together?
And that's because
the big problem has been, how do you confine, you know, a few hundred bacteria in a little, in a place where they stay so that you know they're still there, so that you can observe them over time?
And that's where Jody Connell comes in. Connell is a researcher in Whiteley's lab at UT.
It was kind of like a lot of science, sort of by accident, I was working on something else.
And what she accidentally came across was a way to trap teeny tiny clusters of bacteria in what are essentially teeny tiny cages. To do that, Connell found, you need three pretty awesome things: a computer projector, some Jell-O, and a laser. Yes!
Most people have had, I guess, Jell-O with fruit cocktail suspended in it. It's a treat in primary school for me.
Be warned, we may be about to ruin that treat for you. So Connell's in the lab.
We just had like gelatin packets from the grocery store.
And she added some water.
I sort of thought, well, I guess I'll try tossing cells in here.
So she did.
And so there are bacteria at different positions throughout the gelatin.
Like the fruit in a Jell-O mold.
Just like when you make Jell-O at home, you let it cool.
And it becomes solid.
So it's like Jell-O ready to eat. I don't want to eat this Jell-O.
Because, you know, there's a bunch of bacteria in it. Okay, next you get out your computer projector.
The heart of a computer projector has a little chip in it, and it's basically a whole bunch of little mirrors.
You take out that chip, grab your laser, one with a very narrow beam.
And what we do is scan our laser across the chip.
And by doing that, you can make the laser beam into a shape, a teeny tiny shape.
And then pulse the laser.
What the laser does is take that set gelatin and permanently links up gelatin molecules.
So what you shoot with the laser basically becomes solid.
Yeah, it becomes permanently gelled.
Like they're mortared together like bricks.
From there, you can basically draw a microscopic house around a clump of bacteria, one layer at a time.
We make that object in our gelatin, move the laser a little deeper, and we do this over and over, and plane by plane, we recreate the object that we wanted to create.
It's kind of like 3D printing.
Then we warm up the solution.
The extra gelatin melts away.
And the only thing we're left with then is the object that we've printed out.
So with the bacteria trapped in their little houses, it's time to get down to business.
Doing it this way, we can control every variable that they encounter.
Take Staphylococcus aureus, a pretty common bacteria that causes a lot of infections, you know, staph infections.
If you surround it by another bacterial type, very common bacterium all over the environment called Pseudomonas.
Which is resistant to an antibiotic that usually kills staph.
The Pseudomonas's ability to resist the antibiotic is conferred to the staph.
The staph absorbs the powers of the other bacteria, at least as long as the Pseudomonas is around. But how close do they have to be? How many of each do there need to be?
And what we're hoping to do is actually work out, you know, mechanisms by which these bacteria work together.
And that, they think, could lead to more effective treatments for bacterial infections in the future.
It may not be that you need to treat the staph because it's really hard to treat. You may be able to treat some other bug that's helping the staph out.
So the more we learn about the social lives of bacteria, the better we can fight them. And the next time you have an army of bad bacteria inside you, you might only have to kill off specific soldiers to win the war. For Here and Now, I'm Matt Largy in Austin.
Who knew bacteria were such party animals? This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.